Welcome today to an interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Dharmesh Mehta, Director, Windows and Windows Live Division, Microsoft Corp. Dharmesh, you have a remarkable background with many successes. Thank you for sharing your considerable expertise, deep accumulated insights, and wisdom with our audience.
Stephen, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on your program today.
Dharmesh, every time I look at your background, I'm just amazed. You got expertise in so many domains. You just got great educational history. So from that extensive background of successes, can you sort of profile some of your roles that you've had prior to your current role and some valuable lessons you wish to share from those prior roles?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a couple things I'd talk about. In my past, at one point, I started my own company. We were doing software development for school systems, scheduling attendance grades, a number of other things. I think one of the key things I learned in that role was just a willingness to be flexible and roll up your sleeves. Kind of anything you're doing, no matter how well defined you think your role might be, there's always curveballs that come in, and particularly in our space, whether it's a new competitor, it's a new customer, it's someone you've got to talk to, approach in a different way, try marketing in a different way, try building a different product. You just got to be willing to roll up your sleeves, try something new, and see how it works. I think that's been a pretty important lesson for me that applies a lot in my current role, and I'm sure will through the future. I think a second thing I'd talk about is just a willingness to take risks and sometimes fail. And so I look at when I was a developer back in the day, many, many different software projects I worked on. And, you know, sometimes you'd try things and you think you could get a site up and doing what you wanted and the database would be fast enough and your architecture would work, or it'd meet the needs of a specific customer set. And sometimes you got to go take risks and, you know, take a bet that, you know, you're building something that people may not be saying they want today, but you think is going to delight them. And a lot of the times you might be right, and sometimes you might be wrong, and you got to be willing to push the envelope, take that risk, and go back and learn from why things worked or didn't work. And I think that continues, you know, again, in my current role, as I'm sure through the future, to be a very important lesson.
Well, those are really great lessons. So it sounds like agility is a key to success and the ability to take risks and not to be, you know, maybe get into perfection paralysis and constantly sort of push the envelope and maybe think out of the sandbox at times.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, and there's a balance there, right? I mean, for us, one of the things for us is that with Windows Live today, we've got over 500 million customers. So you can't be flipping, you know, just change everything on a dime every day. You drive people nuts. I mean, that's a lot of people who spend a lot of their life using our services. But on the, you know, on the, there's definitely a balance there where every now and then you've got to go be aggressive, try new things, take some risks. And there's a balance there in how you can do that in a reasonable fashion that's agile but not crazy.
Now, can you profile then your current role and then what you hope to achieve?
I'm currently responsible for running the Windows Live product marketing and product management teams. And so we particularly focus on three big areas, Hotmail, Messenger, and SkyDrive. And with each of those, you know, we think about how do we bring those products to market? What's our story that we're talking to with, you know, all of our customers, both existing as well as new? Where are we looking to acquire new customers versus what are we doing with our existing ones? And then how do we compete? And that's, you know, how do we compete versus competitors? How do we compete, you know, in the press? How do we compete to win, you know, the most avid power users that are out there in so many different arenas? And then in bringing that to market, that's obviously an effort where we build some of that code. We write it, we run it, but we partner with a lot of companies who are critical to those experiences. And so who are those right partnerships and right companies all around the world that we work with to make sure we deliver great consumer experiences? And then finally, we're responsible for the monetization of those to make sure that what we're doing is not only great from a customer perspective, but also, at the end of the day, helps Microsoft, too, in our business goals.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's a very competitive landscape. And so how do you differentiate yourself against those landscapes? And then maybe even a sort of a backdrop to that, what are some of the market segments that you're targeting and supporting? And why are those segments particularly important?
Yeah, I mean, I guess and I can talk about each of those a little bit, but, you know, from a market segment perspective, I think people segment the market in many different ways. You know, a common one is geographically. I think for us, the answer there's a little bit more clear. We're not really focused on any one country or region. We're focused globally. There are certainly, you know, areas where we're stronger today versus maybe a little bit further behind, but at the end of the day, we're trying to build global scale, global services around the world. From a segmentation perspective, I actually think the biggest segmentation we often look at actually goes back to a thing I was talking about a little bit earlier, which is there's a bunch of things we do that are really designed for the masses. They are for, you know, 100% of all people who use email. These are, you know, pretty much all of them will want certain types of things, certain things like performance, security, spam, you know, protection, the ability to easily delete, reply, you know, share photos, like very, very common tasks that are just for everyone. And then I think on the, there is a much smaller set of people that, you know, you'd call power users or some of your most kind of avid, sometimes more technical users who will use every last feature in a product and really put it to its paces, where they'll want to customize the UI, they'll want to have custom rules and alerts and notifications and things like that, that, you know, the average user just may not go through the effort to customize and have that level of control. But for the power user, that's pretty important. And so we think about that balance of how do we make sure this is a great service for everybody, but also very exciting for these power users. And I think, you know, I make that statement about any of our services, whether that's Hotmail, Messenger, or SkyDrive. And then I guess the last thing I'd say is, you know, for each of those, there is a, you know, slightly different market position. Hotmail today is number one email service. And so we have to balance, like, how are we doing things that both take care of the hundreds of millions of people that use Hotmail today and continue to improve their experience. But also, and with Hotmail, there's a lot of focus for us on Hotmail's perception, particularly with those power users, kind of the technical elite in some sense, probably a lot of folks who listen to this podcast. And so I think there's a balance there for Hotmail versus for something like SkyDrive. SkyDrive is a relatively newer service for us, and it's a space that, from an industry perspective, is relatively newer. I mean, people are starting to put some things into the cloud, but when you think about the world that's 5, 10, 15 years out, where everything's in the cloud, we still have quite a ways to go there. And so SkyDrive is in a different place where we have, you know, we have a decently large number of customers, but it's just a much faster growing space. And so we think a lot more about that growth trajectory as opposed to the existing base.
So in your sort of marketing or branding of sort of the Windows Live services, are you kind of injecting the term cloud then increasingly, or is that sort of a direction you're going in?
I think there's, you know, there are places where many companies are using the word cloud, and I think sometimes it's used as like taglines or catchphrases. Microsoft certainly has done that, both on the consumer side as well as enterprise side. I do think they're still, though, prevailing, you know, for most average people, the word cloud is confusing, right? Like, what is the cloud? Is the cloud my cloud? Is it someone else's cloud? What does it really mean if something's in the cloud? Is it backup, or is it a sharing? And so I think there's still a lot to be done to really put the word cloud into language and terminology that people understand and really understand what it means for them. Certainly something Microsoft obviously has a lot of vested interest to help establish for consumers, given the number of cloud services we offer. But I don't think it's a word that today most people could define and you'd get the same definition.
So then how would you define cloud within, let's say, two sentences?
Yeah, so I guess if I were to talk about your cloud for a consumer, I'd really describe the cloud as a place that lets you store, share, and access your stuff, your digital stuff. And so that means everything from, hey, I have two PCs, and I have a bunch of photos sitting on one of those PCs, and the cloud might store some of those photos, or it might let me take those photos from that PC and put them up in the cloud and share them with other people, or it might give me a way to access those because I'm on that second PC or I'm on my mobile phone, and I just want to use the power of the cloud to connect back into that other PC or other device that has my stuff. And so the cloud is that place that can either hold that stuff for you, let you share that with others, or be the glue that lets you get between your devices and all your content.
Well, it definitely sounds like anytime, any place, anywhere.
That is the magical nirvana we're going for.
Now, can you profile the benefits of Windows Live and how Windows Live is differentiated from competitive products?
Yes, I mean, I guess, you know, I talk about each of those probably a little bit separately for each of those products, and then I can talk about kind of how they come together. So for Hotmail, email is a category that, you know, probably is a little bit more established, and in many ways, you look at the email category and what different people have offered. Email as a service started to stagnate a couple years ago. Basically, the innovation is, you know, to use the tagline around email, was bigger and bigger inboxes, right? And now there's, you know, the large major players all basically offer unlimited storage, or so much storage that it's effectively unlimited. And email, in many ways, had stopped innovating a couple of years ago. And so there's been a lot for us on, hey, how do we make email not just a bunch of text or HTML mails that you can put into folders and reply and forward to? And so there's been investment in, like, looking a lot at what are the types of communications people want to have, and how do we make that better, more efficient for people. And so it's things like the way we've made sharing photos or sharing videos or sharing links to content or shipping updates or office docs or the types of things people want to share through email. Instead of making it, I'm attaching a photo or sticking a link into this, let's give people the experience they want, which is when I have that link that I'm sending you that has a YouTube URL in it, you don't actually want to see youtube.com/ you know, V dash whatever the strange string looks like. You want to actually see that video. You want to be able to play it, and you want to be able to pause it. And so how do we convert that content into the experience you want? Same thing, sharing photos. I don't know about you. I have a young child. We have an 8-megapixel DSLR. We take a ton of photos. And in the old days, when I'd want to share those photos, I'd have to send 15 emails to my folks. And each one, I attach 4 photos, because that's all you could attach to an email. But my photos, my folks don't want to see DSC08942. 8943, 8944, and then have to go through 15 emails. They want to see a beautiful photo album, and they want to be able to add comments to that photo album and be able to share that with other people. And so how do we take sending photos and email and just give you, again, the experience you want? And so there's a lot Hotmail's been doing there, you know, first on taking the types of email people send and giving you the experience you want. A second big thing we've been doing with Hotmail is just, it's acknowledging that you don't just use Hotmail, right? You use many other things, and how do we make Hotmail work great with those? So, you know, Facebook is one of those things I talk about. Tons and tons of people use Facebook. What does that mean? It means I have a ton of contacts in Facebook. And so I have some contacts in Hotmail and I have some in Facebook. Well, we make it really easy to connect Facebook into Hotmail. And now sending an email through Hotmail, I can see all my Hotmail friends and I can see all my Facebook friends, and I can just send those people an email. I don't need to worry about which address book they came from because they're my friend. Or, you know, a similar scenario is a ton and ton of people use Office. And so those Office docs I want to send, I don't want to just send a Word doc. The person who receives it wants to be able to view and edit and be able to collaborate with me, or for us to be able to jointly author that Word doc and edit it at the same time. And so again, it's that focus on scenarios, it's the focus on types of things people already do, and obviously that requires a ton of work from us to, you know, go partner with Facebook and make those scenarios work, or go partner with, you know, LinkedIn or Office or wherever they might be. But it's that focus on giving consumers the experience they want, as opposed to being kind of boring, stale email. So that's a little bit on Hotmail, maybe a little bit more than a little bit. And then, you know, I talk about similarly with SkyDrive. I think one of the big investments for us, and quite differentiated from one of our competitors, the scenario I described to you, for that to really work, I've got to make that work for what the average user cares about. And while we'd love every single person in the world to, you know, use Windows PCs and Windows laptops and Windows phones all day long, the fact of the matter is there are a lot of iPhones out there and a lot of Android phones, and there's people who use Macs. And so one of the key things we'll differentiate on, and already do today, is just acknowledging the fact that people live in diverse device ecosystems. And, you know, of course we want SkyDrive to work really, really well on your PC, but SkyDrive's got to work, SkyDrive and Mesh got to work really well when you're on your Mac or you're on your phone. And so you see a lot of investment from us there to really adapt, again, to consumers' lifestyles, acknowledging that people don't just use Microsoft products. They use a bunch of other great products from other companies, and we have to make that work to be a great service. And then lastly, I think on Messenger, I'd say two things. With Messenger, you've seen a big push from us, particularly over the last 6 to 12 months, to really improve the quality of real-time communications, and not just text chat, but also video chat, being able to share photos in real-time, play games, things like that. And as I'm sure many of you know, Microsoft has announced a desire to acquire Skype. And that just adds to our big bet on real-time communications and how much more we think people will want to do there. That's another space that we just say is very early. We'll see where that acquisition ends up, but we are very committed to making sure Microsoft has a very, very compelling scenario in voice and video communications that spans, again, your devices and your networks.
Well, you've already somewhat answered this question, I guess, and that's about delivering value to the different market segments. Are there additional sort of value comments that you want to make about the different kinds of things you're delivering to your different market segments? And then on top of that, how will you know when you have succeeded?
Well, I think, when we look at success, I think there's many different ways you can look at it, right? And I think for us, step number one is always about winning consumers. And then step two is, do we have a good way to monetize that from a Microsoft perspective? And so what I would say from number one, which is always first goal for us, how do we win consumers and feel like we're winning there? It really comes down to two things. One, you can always look at share numbers, and you can look at, share is always tricky because you have to define what is it share of and who are the right competitors to look at within that. And so, for instance, something like Hotmail, people often talk about number of mailboxes, and a lot of the data sources out there often only look at, web mail, but they don't consider what you do on your mobile phone. We think it has to be about using mail across any device, whether it's on the web, it's a client app, it's a mobile app, doesn't matter, but it's about using mail. And it's about your primary inbox. Many people, the average person actually has more than two mailboxes. And so, the definition we use is being people's primary mailbox, which means the first one you actively use, the one you put on your resume, the one you give to your friends and family, not the junk one you use for, emails you don't really want. And so I think, share is obviously a very key part of that. And then I think the second thing that's part of winning consumers is what I just simply call word of mouth recommendation. Are people going around telling their friends, family, and others, we love this product, you got to use it, right? Which is about your perception in the market. It's about people's preference for your product. But you got to have folks, excited about your brands, your products, and going around saying that they're willing to stake, a part of their personal reputation on that and tell their friends and family about it.
So then what's really new, cool, and useful in Windows Live in 2011?
So in 2011, I guess there are two big things you've seen us talking about in the first half. And I think the first I'd talk about, particularly around with Hotmail, there's been a big push to change a good chunk of how we release product and what we're releasing on Hotmail. Again, Hotmail, we should be honest, like 5-6 years ago, Hotmail sort of lost its way. Hotmail, still continued to be number one in terms of share, but we let the product languish about 5-6 years ago. And so it took us a couple years to realize, like, that was just a mistake we made and to come back and get the product back into a healthy state. The last couple of years have really then been, where do we go find these places where we're going to differentiate in the product experience? And then over the last 6 months, we started to just release a lot faster. And so Hotmail has already had 8 meaningful releases, not counting all the small bug fixes and tinkering that we do every day, every hour, but 8 big releases where these are big partner integrations, these are big speed improvements, these are big sets of new calendar integrations. It's meaningful features that we think lots and lots of people are going to use. And we've really just changed the release approach. And I think for Hotmail, it is allowing us to be a lot more agile. And then again, when you think about some of those power users who really want the latest, coolest thing all the time, it's starting to get some of those folks more excited. On SkyDrive, I think the big thing I talk about there is there's just been a big improvement in what I call making that more of a modern app. So betting on HTML5, improving performance, changing the layout, making pictures just beautiful instant on, and things like that that, change that from an app that, used to be relatively functional to something that's a lot more powerful and exciting. And I'd say for both of those, we're 6 months and a little bit into the year. There's still a lot more to come in the rest of 2011. I think it'll be a pretty exciting year, but nothing to announce just yet.
Well, let's extend that question then into 2012. Hey, what's going to drive our passion in 2012 in Windows Live?
Yeah, I think, at a high level, I tell you it's some of the same, right? So on Hotmail, it is just, how do we get this product to be just amazing, where that means it does, of course it does everything that I consider a basic requirement and just like foundational to the product, but what are all these places that it just delights me? It makes my life so much easier. It gives me this very cool scenario that just works with the things I care about, that made my life life easier or allowed me to do something pretty powerful that I wouldn't have expected. And that Hotmail's getting ahead of that, particularly versus, you know, you'd say Gmail being its biggest competitor. On SkyDrive, I think it's less about a direct competitor given it's more of a nascent space. But I think SkyDrive, you know, when we talk about how do we define that cloud, how do we define that anywhere access anytime from any device, and just delivering that in a way that's better and ahead of pretty much anyone else, I think it's going to surprise folks.
When I travel and I talk to people or speak at conferences, I get people coming up and you know, they're consumers, but they're also business people. And I often find that, you know, the boundaries get blurred. So how can enterprise and small and medium-sized business workers employ Windows Live as a flexible environment at home, on the road, and at work?
I mean, I guess I think about two things when it comes to businesses. Anytime you talk about a business, there's a set of decision makers who might make IT policy and make purchasing decisions and support decisions for a business. But at the end of the day, the people who are sitting down at a computer are consumers, right? They are people that will go home and make a bunch of decisions about the apps and services they use. And so we do a lot to make our products, Hotmail, Messenger, SkyDrive, et cetera, work really great for consumers. And there is a strong value to there being similarities in some places between our enterprise products and our consumer products. You know, I'd use Hotmail as a great example, where between Hotmail and Outlook, we share some code. We don't actually share a ton of code, but we actually spend a lot of time between our teams talking about, you know, how do we design the products? How do we design different metaphors for how people think about, you know, structuring their inbox, managing multiple accounts? How do they, you know, the notion that both of these, which, you know, Outlook and Hotmail both grew up as kind of email services, but the concept of your address book and the concept of your calendar, which used to be these big separate things, are really just native to these two now. I mean, it's just a core part of that experience. And so I think there's a lot of things there where, because Microsoft plays in both of these spaces, it allows us to make sure there's a great connected experience. Things work between them too. So like in Outlook, I can pull my Hotmail in just as easily as pulling in my Exchange account that might be my corporate mail. And so again, it just makes those two, what could be very separate areas, instead feel pretty natural and seamless. And then I think there's a second side of business, app and kind of business needs, which is, you know, again, when you go back to that IT department where they might want, you know, controls and group policy and the ability to lock things down, where I would just say that's probably, that is an area that Hotmail, Messenger, and SkyDrive play less into, you know, again, because we're trying to design these consumer services. When you need the great SOX compliance or you need the granular group policy, we have an enterprise side of products that are designed to meet those needs, which just, you know, again, it's not what the average consumer needs.
Now, you indicated that there's literally hundreds and hundreds of millions of people that use Microsoft products, and you must get some stories that you can share where people are using specific components or features of Windows Live to make their lives just more meaningful.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess one, just to make sure we have the right data point, there are over 500 million people that use Windows Live products, and there's about 360 million that use Hotmail, in case I had misspoke, and about, you know, over 300 million that use Messenger, and then, you know, as you can imagine, there's, you know, certainly overlap between those. I think, you know, there's lots of meaningful stories that occur amongst these products. When you think about them, they're communications and sharing products, which naturally mean these are the services you're using to communicate with your family, friends, very powerful things. You know, you see, you know, I can think of many Messenger stories that are about, you know, how someone met, you know, someone they started dating or the person they ended up marrying, or, you know, long distance relationships. And this was, you know, how I kept in touch with my spouse when they were overseas at war, traveling for work, you know, all these types of scenarios. And so they're pretty powerful in that regard. And then, you know, in a number of our products, we've also done a lot of work to just, you know, make sure that service stays available for a long time. And so when you think about, hey, this was the email account I created when I got my first email account. And so thinking back to that time, you know, 10, 15 years ago, when you created that first email account, got online, you know, we're first discovering the internet, and how much people's lives have changed since then, to where, you know, for many folks, the internet's become core to daily life and how they get information and communicate with people. There's a pretty big dramatic shift there. So there's many, many touching stories, from emotionally touching to were just impressively productive, you know, to being able to track down old emails that I sent, you know, to my wife when we first started dating 10 years ago that sit in my inbox, you know, in a safe folder somewhere. There's a wealth of interesting stories there.
You've already touched on some of this already, but can you maybe extend in terms of some data points of what are the usage numbers for Windows Live in 2011 or maybe even 2012, and then which regions do you think are the hottest or will be the hottest?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, so from a numbers perspective, the big numbers we often talk about, Hotmail, 360 million active users. And so I think one thing to distinguish here is we're talking about active users, which means someone signs in at least once a month and does something, sends a mail, starts a chat, something like that, as opposed to, you know, registered accounts where, you know, I actually think we have more registered accounts than there are human beings on the planet. And so it's not really a useful metric to talk about people register lots and lots of accounts. So Hotmail has 360 million active accounts every month, and Messenger is about 300 million. Skyter is a bit smaller, and then we, across all of them, you know, deduplicated, there's about 500 million. I think from a, then you can look at, you know, how does that split up geographically, where I think there's a couple different factors that are important. First is just internet penetration, right? You know, in certain countries, many, many more people as a percent of the population are online. The second factor is obviously the size of the country. And then a third is just growth. And so, you know, for instance, Brazil, pretty large country, but still growing pretty fast in terms of internet penetration versus U.S., pretty large country. Internet penetration is growing a little, but it's a relatively, you know, mature country from an internet perspective. And then, you know, you could take another extreme where you have a country like India that is humongous in terms of its population, but internet penetration is very, very small, but still growing. And so there's, you know, huge fluctuations in what markets look like. And, you know, there's obviously different strategies we take in terms of how much we invest where, you know, for instance, in a country like India, infrastructure can mean, you know, certain internet services are just not relevant when you start getting out to remote villages with, you know, very spotty internet connections where that's just less important and mobile device is far more important than the PC. And so there's balances in how much we invest on PC versus mobile, which services are more important. You know, the notion of sharing 50 megabyte video files isn't something you do when you're out in that remote village. It's more about short communication.
So what else are you really excited about? You know, you really gave us a great landscape of where Windows Live is, but what else are you excited about?
I think the biggest things I'm excited about, and I put it, you know, I'd squarely say three big buckets. One is just, I think, our products as, you know, services in and of themselves. We've talked a little bit about this. You know, there's a lot more to come there, where I'm pretty excited about what we're doing kind of on our own within our services. Everything performance to new features to designing for the power user to just doing things that I think will delight people in and of themselves. The second, I just say, you know, Windows Phone has talked a lot about the what they've called their Mango release that'll come this fall. We've started sharing little bits of Windows 8 and what will come with that. I'm pretty excited about some of the other products that are coming from Microsoft, and then again, how our services will tie into those. And so Windows Phone and Mango has showed some pretty powerful, like when you think about SkyDrive and how natively that's integrated into being able to take all those photos and docs and other things from your phone and be able to share them and access them, and that just being a core part of that experience when your phone connects to SkyDrive. I'm pretty excited about what we're doing with some of the other Microsoft products. And then the third, I just say, and we've talked a bit about this, is just we're not going to build everything, right? And so there's a great you know, phone that a lot of people love that's either called iPhone or Android. There's a great set of social networking services from Facebook and LinkedIn. There's a great set of video sharing on YouTube and things like that that are just, you know, companies that are out there that are doing amazing things. And I'm pretty excited about the way we're taking a very strong focus on the consumer and not worrying about, you know, trying to build everything ourselves, but rather just partnering with other great companies to give consumers what they want.
Well, I'm really excited about all the things that you've talked about, so I'm looking forward to seeing them all. Now, let's move to some broader questions.
Sure.
So in your current role, what are your top ways of measuring success?
So, I mean, I think, you know, from an external perspective, I think it really goes back to that, you know, discussion we had around winning consumers and how do we look at both share and then kind of word of mouth recommendation or perception or preference or something like that on the how are we doing from how people recommend us. I think on an internal perspective, we look a lot at, you know, how efficiently are we using the resources. So kind of how many people, how much budget are we spending for that value that we're we're driving. And those metrics become pretty core to how we look at our business month over month and kind of manage how are we doing out in the marketplace.
I guess the MVP, the most valuable professionals, play a key role in providing feedback to your group so that you're really meeting the needs of the present consumer and ensuring all that, you know, it's a great user experience.
Yeah, I find our MVP program is very valuable to us for a couple of reasons. One is they are, they're obviously all over the internet and hearing feedback from all sorts of users that they can provide us, and that's very valuable. Second, the MVPs are often themselves, you know, what I call some of those power users who have some of the most demanding needs, and so they personally often can give us feedback. So they may not hear from a ton of places, but because they'll put our product really through the paces, they will discover other things, be it bugs or just feature ideas, and that feedback can be great. And then third, they're a community that we try to spend a lot of time with, helping provide a perspective on how we thought about the product, how we built things, things that are, you know, different ways to do things in the product, and so they can help amplify our message in other communities, be that, you know, helping people who have problems and it's, you know, a little bit more support or help to, or be it just, you know, how we thought through our design or how we thought through what we're trying to solve for, and just help others on our behalf. And so all of those end up being very valuable for us.
I'm just thinking of one story where one of your MVPs did a keynote for an event called 24 Hours in the Cloud, and it was all about Windows Live and just what a great set of experiences it can provide. So again, you know, your team is out there everywhere.
Yeah, we love it. We absolutely love it. You know, again, because we have a set of folks that work here within Microsoft, but, you know, if we're building the right stuff, our goal absolutely is that there is more than just the people sitting within our, you know, campus that are talking about our product, telling others about our product, if we're doing our jobs well.
Now, Dharmesh, you're a highly respected leader, sort of a global visionary in the kind of the programs you're setting and the input you're getting and the impact you have. So in your current role, then, what are some of your top challenges and your top opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, I guess some of the top challenges, I mean, obviously, one, there are certainly people we compete with, many of whom are, you know, big, large companies who also have tons of investments in this space. And so, you know, we are always challenged by competitors, and I'd say, you know, right now, particularly by some pretty strong, good competitors. A second, you know, big challenge for us is always there is just, you know, thousands of things we could do, and you've got to pick, right? So that is, you know, picking what features you're going to build, that's picking what campaigns you're going to run, that is picking who you're going to talk to about which things, and where you're going to invest your time. And, you know, more often than any other constraint, our constraint is less about anything other than people's time, right? So that people's time, whether it's used for building content, creating campaigns, writing code, debugging, testing, you know, improving performance, whatever those things are, but it comes down to people time more than anything else. And that's always a tough thing, you know, from a challenge in terms of picking, because every time you pick something, you're not picking something else. And sometimes you have analytical ways to look at that, and sometimes it's more qualitative than you're making bets. And so again, you're taking risks, and that has its own set of challenges. I think from an opportunities perspective, I would just say, you know, I'd say we have a couple of opportunities. You know, if I go back to Hotmail, I feel pretty excited about the Hotmail product. From a feature and capability perspective, we have a lot of work and opportunity to go improve our brand perception, right? And so I think that's a big opportunity for us to just go knock out now that we've got an amazing product again. I think on Messenger and video, you know, that's a space that we're obviously making big bets on. It's a space that is very nascent. Video chat usage still within the overall internet is super low, just as a scenario. It's exploding and growing very rapidly, but it's just very early, and so I'm excited about how that will shape up. There's lots of, you know, competitors, again, investing in this space and companies looking at very cool things to do, but it's very early. And then SkyDrive, I'd say something similar, which is just the, you know, if I talk about that scenario where all your stuff is available anytime, anywhere, with all the right permissions and security and reliability for you from any one of your devices, that's an amazing world. It affords amazing opportunities. I am looking forward to how far we can push that, because we are certainly not close to that vision today, right?
You know, amongst all the current projects that you're working on, is there some lesson that you can share from one or more of those projects?
I think the biggest thing we've learned is, and I'd say me specifically, is what I put as focus. Windows Live, as a Uber brand kind of umbrella, has been tens and tens of products across many different things. And over recent history, we really focused that down to Hotmail, Messenger, and SkyDrive, which are the three things I've talked about that me and my team are responsible for. And then our essential suite of apps for your Windows PC that there's now another team that's responsible for. And that's pretty much it, right? And so if you go back in Windows Live history, we've had a litany of services. We've tried, you know, spreading product engineering focus as well as marketing focus, as well as, you know, trying to land that in the customer's mind, driving the right partnerships and establishing those, and just tried to do too many things, where I think we've just realized, like, let's focus on what we think is most important, build those, and for everything else, either don't do it or partner with great companies if we think there's a relationship that's important. You know, a key scenario I talk about, we for a long time were in the blogging business. We had a product called Windows Live Spaces. And, you know, the blogging business is interesting, and there's many companies that are in the blogging business. But the more we looked at it, we just decided this isn't one we need to be in. There's some great companies that are out there that do wonderful stuff, and where we think there are tie-ins with the products we are focused on, we can partner really well. And so we took Spaces, and we took all the users, and we did a bunch of work to try and make it as smooth as possible for them to be able to migrate their blogs over to WordPress.com. And we moved all those customers there. From the ones we've heard from, most seem to be very happy. WordPress has a ton of new features and capabilities that Spaces didn't have. WordPress is squarely focused in blogging, and will continue to invest there. And so the customers get a great experience. And we don't need to be in the blogging business, which means I have one less thing to focus on and can put more energy towards the things we are focused on. And so that notion of focus, which is hard, right, because you sort of want to do everything, that's the natural, you know, human mindset for many of us, is a little tough, but it's very powerful and I think important for us.
You know, for several decades now, the consumer space has always led the enterprise space. And in that way, I think you're perfectly situated to say what specific technologies should business and IT executives be embracing today and in 2 years?
I guess the couple things I talk about, I think in the things I describe, there are probably two things that, you know, I think back to when I worked on the enterprise side of software that would have made people really nervous. One was I talked about how we're partnering with all these companies. And so all of a sudden, if I let my customers use Hotmail, Hotmail is now connected to Facebook. And so this means my, you know, my marketing exec who sits in one of my departments now has access to Facebook while he's at work. And does that make me feel uneasy? Because now he can chat with his friends and socialize and goof off during the day. And so I think that's, you know, one thing. And I, you know, the core thing I just say there is for folks that want to goof off during work, they're going to find ways to goof off during work. Right. And so trying to put up a bunch of artificial walls, I think in many scenarios, isn't really going to accomplish the right thing in the long term. And I think we just live in a world where people are going to have smartphones and devices in their pockets that are always on, that are connected to whatever they want. And similarly, you know, be able to get on a phone call and do things like that. We're trying to put up these walls between these services are okay and these are not okay, is going to be hard for, you know, the core things people care about. And I just think it's somewhat fruitful. The second thing that if I was on the enterprise side software that I would have probably reacted to was when I started to talk about SkyDrive and I talked about being able to put your files up in the cloud and have anywhere access to them. That certainly creates some anxiety when what if that document that's going up to the cloud is our, you know, very confidential P&L or some HR, you know, plan about compensation or something like that that is a, you know, private confidential doc. And I think this is just going to be one where I'd say both between people who manage IT departments and IT infrastructure, as well as, you know, people who provide the software, folks like us at Microsoft, need to do good work where we're making clear what is consumer, you know, what is your personal data and what is corporate data. And so even the example I gave of Outlook lets you connect your Hotmail in. So I, for instance, do that. And so I have my personal Hotmail account connected into Outlook. I also have my Exchange account that has all my Microsoft email. And making sure that something like Outlook makes very clear what is work and and it's my work email, which means my IT department can scan all of it. For SOX compliance, it goes through that process. There's logging, there's, you know, retention policies versus what's my Hotmail. And that's my personal mail. And work can't scan that. Work can't, you know, put in policies on that. But it's my personal mail and where that line is and making sure it's clear to the user as well as to the business, I think is a critical thing. But again, I think it's, you know, I'd say in the same vein, not something you can't assume people are going to take their photos and docs and other information and, you know, their personal information and want to share it. Because when I show up at work, and, you know, I was out with my kid last weekend, I absolutely want to show one of my coworkers that photo. And if I don't have a way to do that, that's going to be a problem.
I mean, actually, I have a background also as a, you know, an amazing leader and visionary leader and manager. And so over the years, you've picked up some leadership skills and experiences. And of course, you have background education in that area. So what are your top leadership tips from that experience, from that background, from your education?
I mean, I guess we've talked about a couple, you know, notion of, you know, be willing to roll up your sleeves. Don't feel like because you're running the organization or you're the manager or CEO or whatever the title may be, that that means that you're just, you know, running around telling people what to do. Everyone needs to be willing to roll up their sleeves and pitch in and do work. It might be different work or at a different altitude, but everyone's got to be willing to get things done. I think that's one. Second, particularly for leaders, that notion of focus is critical. Often, the further down in the chain you are, the harder it is for you to see the big picture, and you're kind of focused on your little piece, and it's hard to, it's harder to try and say this isn't worth doing. And the more you're a leader and helping drive the vision for a broader org, the more you need to be, you know, setting the focus and explicitly prioritizing and deprioritizing things. And then the last I'd say is just to focus on great people, which is everything from, you know, always recruiting and looking for great talent, fostering that great talent, helping, you know, both acquire as well as move people on, which doesn't mean, hey, someone's doing a bad job, but I have had tons of folks where I thought great people, the right next thing for them to do is something that's outside my team and helping them do that and knowing that ends up being right for them, right for the org, and allows me to bring in even greater talent in the future.
I know. I guess it sounds like Harrison is with you.
Harrison is with me. Some of that great talent we brought in.
Now, in a very broader sense, can you make a few predictions of the future, maybe their implications and how we can best prepare?
I guess the one we've talked a little bit about that I actually think will be interesting. I think when you, sometimes when we talk about everything moving to the cloud, I think there are a couple things that people think about. One, I think many people think Microsoft's against that. And I actually think that's just a misperception. Microsoft absolutely is fully committed and wants to get all this stuff into the cloud. And I think people will be surprised by some of the things we will do to help that process. I think, you know, from a prediction perspective, I think people who are often in the tech sphere and talk about tech and write about tech think that this is further along than it actually is. And I think the average person thinks it's further behind than where it is. And I think over the next 5 years, there's going to be a huge push because companies will figure out the scenarios that will just make it so much better to have all your stuff in the cloud. And so to add a little color there, you know, I take a lot of photos, and many of them get shared through email, on Facebook, up in SkyDrive, on Flickr, in many different places, right? And yet, if I look at all the photos and all the video I've captured and what percent of them are actually sitting in the cloud versus sitting on my PC's hard drive or on, you know, the extra storage I have at home, the majority of it is sitting at home, right? Because I don't actually share a ton of those photos because some of them are all the bad copies or some are personal and not meant to be shared and some are all these wedding videos that I don't know anyone else really wants to see. And so, you know, whether it's photos and videos or it's your music, like how much of your music sits in the cloud today versus it sits on your music player and maybe on your PC, you know, if you're one of the people that actually, you know, downloads and buys music as opposed to just stream. And so I think people would be a little bit shocked if you sit in the tech sphere on just what percentage of all this data currently doesn't sit in the cloud. But to the example of something like streaming or the fact that, hey, I bought the song and I now want to be able to play it on on any of my devices. Or I took this photo, and just because I'm, you know, out for the weekend and didn't bring my PC, but I've got my phone, I still want to be able to share that photo or show someone that photo that I took 3 weeks ago. And all those types of scenarios that require the cloud, I think will very rapidly help move more content to be accessible or available in the cloud. And I think we'll be shocked at how quickly that will happen.
Dharmesh, you're a computing professional, and you know, you see accountants and doctors and lawyers and engineers. Do you think computing professionals should be recognized as professionals in the same sense as doctors and lawyers and so on?
Certainly. I think there's obviously many differences, and actually, ironically, my wife is a physician, so I probably know more about that space than I might have personally cared to. But, you know, when I think about the IT industry and the level of personal data, personal files, PII, and other types of information about people and their personal assets that, you know, moves through our infrastructure that sits in people's servers, that sits on people's devices, that our industry has involvement with, I think that's critical, right? To just think about what are the right industry practices, security, privacy, policy. I think it's a critical part of our industry that in many ways we're a bit behind some of these others, but I expect that's something that will catch up.
We're down to our last question, and this is where I turn the tables. We've covered a lot of topic areas. You're very eclectic in terms of your background and your knowledge, kind of a master of everything. In that sense, then, I probably missed some questions. Are there ones that I should have asked, and then can you ask them and answer them?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you actually covered a pretty broad swath across, you know, our products, where they're going, where they've been. There really isn't anything else that comes to mind for me. I mean, I think as a whole, Windows Live's come a long way, and I'd really, you know, talk about Hotmail, Messenger, and SkyDrive, and all in very different stages of kind of their evolution. And, you know, I'm pretty excited and very bullish about where they're going. I think particularly looking at the second half of this calendar year and, you know, going into the first part of 2012, you guys are going to see a ton of product as well as, you know, disclosure on what's coming up, you know, thinking about how this ties into things like the phone and other Microsoft assets and big partnerships with other companies. I think you'll see a ton from us that both excites you about our products and about where they're going. And so not any other questions that come to mind, but I'm very excited. And, you know, thank you for the great questions you've asked me.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, and I can feel the excitement that you have in terms of your role and where Windows Live is building. And as a result, I'm excited about where
awesome.
It's going. So I know you've got a really heavy schedule. So really, we're very thankful that you came in. You got this great background of successes, and you shared them with us, and you shared your views on where Windows Live is going. So thank you for coming in to do this interview.
Happy to do it. Anytime, Stephen. Thank you for having me on.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Dharmesh Mehta, Director, Windows and Windows Live Division, Microsoft Corp.